Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Ting.com. Ting gives you big savings and billing clarity for mobile phone service. Try their online savings calculator and save $50 on your device purchase at Ting.com/AllAboutAndroid.
Welcome to All About Android, episode 55, recorded on Monday, April 9th, 2012. This is your weekly source for all the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Eileen Rivera.
I'm Jason Howell.
I'm Ron Richards.
You're gone.
Where are you? I'm in my new location. I've moved house in San Francisco.
So oh, my God.
I really like your new set.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yes, you're standing.
No more cavern shot anymore. I've upgraded.
Well, congratulations on the move.
Yeah. That's not the only thing I've upgraded, though.
Who got a Nexus?
Wow,
who
Galaxy
is the only
Nexus.
One without a Nexus?
So, okay, first question, Ron. Are you referring to it as your Galaxy Nexus or as your Nexus Prime?
No, I'm referring it to my new box of awesome.
Okay.
My new phone.
I named it myself. Yeah, my new phone, the Google phone. That's
awesome.
Call it.
Prime.
Yeah, it is great. Yeah, I finally made the jump, so I'm on it. So I'm loving every minute of it. Battery life is better. Everything's great. So
congratulations, congratulations. Awesome. And right joining us in studio is Tony Hannity's mobile tech editor for LazyTechGuys.com.
Hey guys,
thank you for showing up here.
Thanks. It's been an honor to be here. I've always wanted to be on All About Android. So
it's awesome having you in. I should give just a little bit of insight. Tony actually worked at Verizon before you went full time with Lazy Tech Guys. And you were the one that reached out to me on Twitter and was like, hey, you should buy your phone from me. So I actually got my Galaxy Nexus from Tony.
From this guy.
We got to talking and stuff. Yeah. And I got to tell you, there's a little scratch up here. Do you think maybe?
There's an 800 number.
Okay.
And for our listeners out there, what phone are you using?
I'm currently using a Samsung Charge.
Okay.
I was using an HTC Thunderbolt until I bricked it.
So you actually bricked it, like perma-bricked it?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. Congratulations. That's really hard to do.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. I was listening to your other episode, and I was like, oh, no, I did it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
right.
But yeah, this is kind of a loner phone until HTC comes out with something better.
Which?
The One X? No?
Well, I'm going to stick with Verizon, so incredible 4G,
so you can't do that. Yeah.
One X 4G, incredibleness,
gotcha.
Yeah, whatever.
All right.
Sometime soon.
Well, this week we're going to be talking about Instagram. Apparently, they're in the news.
Can't avoid it.
And they're in the news. Kind of big deal. Google tablets, and I'm dunking this Pantech Element for the first time in water while.
I'm so excited for this.
Hope to God
it's going
to
be
okay.
It's going to be our 2 a.m. on cable TV.
This is the highlight of my day, knowing that this was coming, that Google tablet get dunked in water and still work.
Yes. Oh, God. I hope it does.
And it can be yours for only.
I'm nervous. All right. Well, before we do that, let's start with our news.
Yes, it's that time. New data posted on Google's Android developer site show that Ice Cream Sandwich now rests comfortably at 2.9% of all Android devices, with Gingerbread growing, actually, to 63.7%, up from 54.9% back in January. And Honeycomb still beats Ice Cream Sandwich at 3.3%. That seems like kind of an opportunity right there for Ice Cream Sandwich to double if they just upgrade all those Honeycomb tablets to ICS and make that happen. And for those of you wondering, I'm sure there are a lot of you wondering where little old Cupcake stands, 0.3%. Still running Cupcake. That just boggles my mind. Let me level with you. If you are actually running Cupcake, trust us. It's time to upgrade.
Yeah.
just do it. You owe yourself that.
We make fun of Eclair users, but Cupcake?
Cupcake?
Cupcake
and donut.
I don't know if you saw when I was over the weekend when I was packing, when I was moving, I found all my boxes and I found my G1 box.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And the phone in it. And yeah. So running Cupcake.
I suppose there will at least from the short term, always be some devices running Cupcake, because developers, do they still test on devices that old? I don't know. I'm sure some of them do.
I don't know. But the thing is, there's still devices out there that are going to be running Froyo for a while. And, mm-hmm. you know, Gingerbread is obviously the major player in the Android market right now. So for Ice Cream Sandwich to be, you know, where they're at right now, it is a growing pain. But, you know, hopefully they'll take over where Honeycomb is right now mm-hmm. very, very soon.
Do I count in those numbers as a CM9 person? Do I count at the 2.9, or am I just?
I don't know.
I'm just out
do.
There. I don't count. I don't. Think.
I don't think that the number. I think this is
like solid,
more official.
Yeah.
Yeah.
More official.
No, there's got to count. There's got to be some sort of thumbprint or some sort of, you know, like register number that goes to Google when you sign in and tells you what kind of device you're on.
Somebody in the chat room is probably going to correct us on this. My understanding was that it was not counting all the people who are loading their own ROMs and stuff. But you're right, Ron. There's got to be some sort of way that this is.
Am I part of the group or not?
Because you would have to add up, would all those percentages not add up to 100 then? And would Google then be suppressing the number of people that have their own modded ROMs?
Or do I just still count in Gingerbread?
Well, and they're coming straight from the source. They're coming straight from Google on their Android developer site.
And it says,
I don't know.
It says Android 4.0.3 when I go into settings.
That is got to be. It's got to be a version of Android that the ROMs identify with, and that's what they report back. Mm. What I find most interesting about this is I think that this is if I was a smarter person and I knew more about math and product life cycles and things like that, you've got a great interesting graph of operating system adoption versus device penetration, and you could really predict how long it could take an operating system to penetrate a marketplace by watching to see how many devices running Gingerbread get out into the open versus how many devices that can run Ice Cream Sandwich. I think like layering those two kind of numbers, I think could be really interesting if I was smarter.
Well, I'm just going to say I count then. I'm part of the 2.9%.
Yeah.
It says right here.
Longo is a 1%, right?
Longo is no longer 1%. It's jumped
and even
up.
Longer than that, it was imperceivable. It was so small that they were like, yeah, we don't even know it was that small. So, hey, progress.
Progress. And here is more progress from Samsung, who has announced their flexible, unbreakable AMOLED display called the Yom?
Yom.
Yom? Y-O-U-M. Now, we, I don't remember seeing it at CES this past year, but I did see, I know, these faces. If you're looking at the video, people are shocked at how flexible the screen is. And I saw some of this at CES last year. They're very shocked. Wow. It is shocking.
Even all the way back there behind that guy. That guy's even shocked.
Several rows of people are shocked.
Samsung has entered an application for a patent trademark for Yom. And the difference between the standard OLED and this is that it's use of film instead of glass. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's unbreakable. And I guess you might. People were saying maybe a 2012 release, but it's looking more like 2013. Looks pretty cool. Do you want bendable phones? They won't break? Yeah. What do you think?
Roll it up and put it in your back pocket.
That's right.
Okay, so then we have to ask the question, next big thing or gimmick? Like, what?
Next big thing. Totally next big
thing.
Yeah?
Think so?
I have been hearing about the flexible device, flexible display since college in like the mid-90s. Like we saw prototypes of this where it'll be thin and you'll be able to, you know, fold it or roll it or whatever. This is next big thing. This is the future. Totally. That's my prediction.
It's what you see in the movies. I'm telling you.
Yeah. That's true. It is what you see in the movies.
Iron Man had one when he was in court. Yeah. The see-through smartphone by LG.
Oh, that's right. Mm-hmm. I forgot about it. Well, there if Iron Man had it, then we're all going
to have it.
Have
to have it.
So, yeah. That's usually how it goes.
Tony Stark, sorry.
All right. Well, it's time for our interview with Joe Braidwood, the CMO of SwiftKey. Now, he's in London. So, as we're recording this, you're in the future. Hi, Joe.
Hello.
How are you doing? Well, thank you so much for coming on to the show. And I know that Jason, myself, and Ron, Tony, have you been playing with SwiftKey 3 as well? We've all been playing around with SwiftKey 3 beta.
Awesome.
And, you know, tell us a little bit in your words about this this new update and specifically the notion of no space bar.
Yeah, well, it's ironic because there's also a bigger space bar, which I think you guys covered the Google Tap launch last week.
And
we launched the world's biggest space bar as a sort of precursor to SwiftKey 3 coming out. And, it's all about the space bar with this release. That's the thing I'm most excited about. Do you need it? Do you not need it? Is it easier to hit? Does it even matter that it's there? What we've done is we've tried to really tackle one of the hardest problems that we think exists in keyboards and text entry, which is trying to figure out when you've missed a space across a whole string of long characters of sloppy text. Some of the other keyboards out there already do this to some degree. What we try to do is figure out a way to make it a whole step more powerful. So you could just literally throw your thumbs at the keys, vaguely make some sort of sense, but miss spaces completely and it still figures out what you're trying to say. As is now on screen, apparently.
Yeah, there it is. You know, it's actually, to me, a smoother experience than the former version. And I don't know. What do you think, Jason?
No, I mean, I've been a huge fan. I can't type and talk at the same time. I've been a huge fan of SwiftKey for quite a long time just because of the accuracy of the kind of recognition of what you're typing and being able to learn your history of typing and everything. And this, it's one of those updates that really seems like a no-brainer when you think about it. Like, why don't they all do this? Because it's really so incredibly common to make these kinds of mistakes very easily when you're talking about the small screen real estate and everything. And you guys have really nailed a piece that I wouldn't be surprised, you know, the other keyboard makers are looking at and thinking, wow, that's a really interesting, great idea to do it. When I first saw this, I was like, well, who's going to type without using a space bar? But then I was like, no, that's not necessarily the point.
Yeah.
It's if you happen to miss the space bar, then it'll make that correction for you. Right. It's really well done.
Yeah. I mean, you just keep typing and typing and typing, and then you'll see the sentence just sort of generate. And, you know, you can at any point tap on the words that separate. I mean, it seems like it wouldn't separate, but when you're typing, that's what you showed me, I think, the first time when we downloaded it last week, Jason,
sentence without any spaces.
Space bar,
the second you hit the period, it populates completely. It's like, wow, it's a wow moment, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. So, what's so ironic about that?
Go ahead.
Just to address that point, is when we actually started tackling this problem, we didn't think, let's build a keyboard without a spacebar. Let's try and create a situation where you can just type without doing any of that. What we thought was, it's really frustrating when you miss a space because the whole prediction algorithm breaks down. It can't figure out what you're trying to say. So we're like, okay, let's try and solve this problem in a really powerful way that we can apply across every language that will just work. And that's what we started with, and where we got was this awesome technology that just seems to figure out what you're saying, and you can just keep going, and it kind of makes you wonder, is the space bar even necessary anymore?
Mm-hmm. We did get a question. I posed a question, both of us, on G+, if we had any questions, if our listeners had any questions for you, Joe, and one of them said, well, I really don't need the space bar, so can I get rid of it entirely? Is that even possible? And I don't think it is in settings, but he said, you know, that bar is so big, I really don't need it anymore. I want to put something else in there.
But some smileys and things. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the big challenges here. It's we on the one hand, have this really, really active community of users who want to, have a bigger space bar. They've been complaining about the size of the space bar in SwiftKey X for a while. So we thought, okay, right, we'll address that. And then on the other hand, we've got this brand new technology that kind of makes it irrelevant. And one of the challenges that we've got now moving forward is looking at all the feedback we've collected. What will be the best experience that we can give people with this keyboard when we finally launch it out of beta? And what will that look like? And I think I looked at the Google Plus. That was one of the other contentious issues, is all these people saying, I don't like this, I do like this, I want this. And we have this big challenge of how do we figure out the best user experience and build from that?
Yeah, because I could imagine you could get really complicated by opening it up and saying, well, we'll make everything completely customizable. And if you want that space bar there, you can. If you want it removed, you can. You can do all these changes to the keyboard. But then you really kind of remove the ease of use of the keyboard out of the box. It's probably not the smartest way to go if you want a cohesive product to offer.
Right. And we've thought about that. Sorry, go ahead, Eileen.
Oh, I was just going to ask, how much time do you think is actually saved? Have you ever done any calculations, just like typing furiously? Just wondering.
We did. We did. We actually worked out. I mean, obviously, it's quite a loose calculation because what you're thinking about is like we have a vague statistical idea of how many keystrokes we've saved people. But what you have to bear in mind is that people who save keystrokes are only one kind of user of SwiftKey, because there are two big use cases. There's the kind of I type really sloppily and it just corrects it and it works. And then there's the I'm very precise and it anticipates my words and it saves keystrokes. But if you look purely at how many keystrokes we anticipate for people, we've saved, I think it's approaching 50 billion keystrokes at the moment. And if you, I mean, you can do some sort of back of a postcard maths for that, or math. And what you get to is we anticipated it would probably be in the region of about half a millennium that we'd saved in terms of actual productivity time. Now, that could be completely a complete joke. I don't know, 500 years? Does that sound feasible? But if you imagine that folks typed slower and, you know, you kind of guesstimate, you get to about half a millennium at the moment. And that's just purely from anticipation. So from typo correction, it could be another half a million. We could have saved an entire millennium by now. Who knows?
The one thing that confused me, and I saw a little bit of this in the Google Plus thread, was the fact that it's SwiftKey 3. And I know the SwiftKey that I've bought is SwiftKey X. Is this going to be folded into X, or is this a completely different product?
So that's a really good question. The plan when we started with this was we were going to build the sort of the thing that would succeed SwiftKey X and roll it out on the Android market for all the users that currently exist. We've still got to work out the exact refinement. I think right now we're focused on the fact that we're in beta and trying to figure out what the best features are and build the product. But we're committed to bring this to the marketplace as soon as we can, so hopefully in the next couple of months.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Ron, did you have a question?
Oh, no, my question was kind of similar more towards the customization, is that when you're going through those use cases, how do you decide which ones are, okay, this is going to be our default set versus these are the customizations we're going to allow, knowing that you can't make every user happy. You can't identify every use case. Everybody's different in their way of approaching how they type.
Right. It's actually really, really difficult. And I think what we try to do is focus on what the most useful scenario is that will benefit, you know, everyone from, you know, your absolute Android super geek to my mum, or, you know, and that whole spectrum, and try and figure out, you know, what will be the most useful use case for them and then build from that. But I think one of the things we're trying to do moving forward is rather than having to determine sort of binary options, like, are you a precise typist? Are you a rapid typist? Do you like, you know, smart space technology, or do you like this punctuation key? Try and build something that's just really easy so anyone can pick it up and use it, but it adapts to each user. And I guess that's one of the core principles which makes SwiftKey different to other products, is we try to use machine learning to adapt and learn to the way you use language. And I think moving forward, we're going to try and take that principle and put it into more of the UI framework as well. So can we adapt to the way that you interact with your device in a better way to provide a better user experience automatically, rather than you having to go into the settings and pick and choose between all different features?
Sure. Now, we've featured SwiftKey before on the show, and one of the number one questions that we got with everyone being afraid of privacy is privacy and inputting all your various accounts so that you can have that prediction calculation, like Twitter, Facebook, and your Gmail account. You guys have a lot of options, an SMS, in order to accurately predict your personal typing style. What do you say to those users who are, you know, quite paranoid? There's a lot of questions out there about privacy in general.
Right. We take privacy very, very seriously. And I think the first thing to point out, and one of the other questions I saw someone submit, is some people think, because there's a warning that comes up whenever you enable a third-party keyboard on Android, some people think that we log keystrokes and all the things that you type, and we don't do that. We've never done that. We're committed to not doing that. This is really important to stress, because when you do enable a third-party keyboard, Google have that warning that's there primarily, I think, to protect them legally, and it says this could log credit card details, passwords, and things, because it's an input method. So technically they're saying we're taking this bit of software and it could do whatever the developer's done with it, because there's no sort of pre-approval process on Android. But, you know, we don't do that at all. We're an approved editor's choice app on Android, and Google have chosen us, and they love our app. And it's really important to stress that. What we also obviously do is if you personalize, which is something that you elect to do, that means you give us permission for our servers to access your data in the cloud, to learn and build language modules from that and push them down to your phone. So that is a slightly different state of affairs. But what we will never, ever do is learn just purely from your keystroke entry and take that back up to the cloud. You know, and in the future, we might bring in backup services and things that sync between devices that help drive a better user experience. But that will always be, you know, someone opting into that service. So yeah, we do take privacy extremely, extremely seriously, and it's something that I really must stress is protected. And you know, our business wouldn't exist, and we wouldn't really have anything to be proud of if we didn't take privacy very seriously, because we rely on our users. So does that answer your question?
Yeah. No.
No. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I have a question about working with vendors. You know, I would say one of your key kind of competitors in this space is Swype. They've had a lot of success working with vendors to get their keyboard installed on other hardware and everything right out of the gate. I know you guys had the Zoom 2, these SwiftKey pre-installed on the Zoom 2, unless I'm mistaken, but I'm pretty sure it's on there. Is this a priority for you guys? Are you guys working in that direction for other devices right now?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Our vision is to revolutionize text entry across the entire device ecosystem. And there's no better way to do that than to do it from right out of the box. And, you know, what happened when we started tackling this problem a few years ago is we focused on the technology and we thought, right, how can we really prove that this technology is awesome and that people should use it? And we went to some of the OEMs and we said, hey, look at our technology. And because we were this tiny company, we were only about four people at that stage, they didn't really pay much attention. So what we did is we realized that Android has this awesome, you know, third-party API that you can create a keyboard application for, and we didn't really expect SwiftKey to become as popular as it has been ever since, but we thought, right, okay, we'll launch an app and see if folks can pay attention that way. But I think, you know, that's always been part of a broader vision, which is about using really powerful technology that understands language to improve the way that people can type on these devices. And of course, part of that strategy is us dealing with OEMs to try to improve that core experience from the word go.
Sure. Okay, great.
Are there any updates? Oh, go ahead, Joe.
So I was just going to say we do have other people we're working with. One of the slight difficulties is we can't really talk about it because of the nature of those deals. Yeah. They always say, oh, you know, this is our product and we want to talk about it ourselves. So we say, okay, cool, we'll help you improve text input. But there, it's not just that device that you mentioned. There are a whole number of devices that we're working with at the moment, and it's actually forming the bulk of our work that we're doing in addition to SwiftKey. So I guess watch this space.
Awesome.
I know, obviously, the keyboard is focused on text and typing, but I did get a question from someone who wants to know if you will enable the ICS type as you talk mode. And you have voice input on here, but, you know, the type as you talk on ICS is literally
super handy.
You launch it and you could follow it types it out exactly as you're speaking. Is that something you guys are looking into at all, or are there just other developments that you've prioritized?
Now, I'm not an expert on this one, but I do think that the type as you talk mode in ICS is a separate IME.
Okay.
So I'm just trying to find it on my phone. I think when you switch to that, what you're essentially doing is switching to what is another keyboard on your phone. So if I come in here, Google Voice typing is an option in the select input method. And as a result, you know, what you can do then is jump to that. But that's something that we can't create.
Got it.
Because it's Google's product. What we do, obviously, is we use Google's voice API from within the app to allow people to dictate. But I think that, you know, we may be able to, if there's enough demand for it and people, you know, go onto our VIP forum, which I would implore all people to do, come and get our beta at vip.swiftkey.net and give us feedback. But if you do go in there and it does get enough support, then what we could do is perhaps make a quick link to switch to that IME if you wanted to voice type with it and then switch back again when you're ready. And I guess that's probably the best answer I can give. If there are APIs that Google launch in due course that allow third-party keyboards like ours to integrate the technology that does that in real time right into the core of the app, then I'm sure we'd explore that because it's a great feature. But as I'm aware at the moment, I don't think that exists.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And another question that I got on my Google Plus thread has to do with international languages. Obviously, it's a mm-hmm. you know, it's a keyboard, and it relies very heavily on the languages of the world. So one person in particular says there's no support for their language, and I'm sure this applies to other languages as well. In particular, this is Bahasa Melayu from Malaysia. That mm-hmm. language says, how do you approach broadening the language packs? Is this kind of, I imagine it's an ever, you know, ever growing kind of ambition of yours to get in as many languages as possible. Is that a really difficult thing to do, to be able to push it out?
It's completely and utterly about our access to data. I mean, what people who know a bit about natural language processing, which is kind of the core basis of the technology we use to learn and build new language packs, is they rely on data, observing the way that words are used together across you know, gigabytes and gigabytes of text. And you know, we are very committed to expanding languages as quickly as we can. I think we're up to 42 as of SwiftKey 3 beta launching last week. So a year ago, I think it was about 6. And that's because we've got a languages team who constantly plow through data and put it into our languages pipeline and then roll those languages out into the product. So yes, we are committed to extending that. I don't off the top of my head know when Bahasa Malaya will be ready. But I think what we've got is a languages roadmap that looks at, you know, the kind of languages that are most used on products, the kind of languages that would be really strategic for us to expand into to kind of get access to, you know, the right kind of device makers and the right kind of audiences out there. So Korean, we just launched, for example, and that's a really interesting language because, you know, Korea is the most engaged app market in the whole world. If you look at some of the research, Koreans buy more apps per capita than anywhere else, I think. So, you know, what we're doing is we're working through that list of languages, and as we proceed, you know, we're bringing more and more into the mix. But certainly Malaysia is a territory we want to support, and there are many others too. And it's just it's really about getting access to that data. And I think that answers the other question that was on that thread, which is there anything for people to do that they can help us with? And that does sometimes crop up. You know, being able to donate their messages sometimes is really helpful. And if there are things that people can do, we'll post about them in our VIP forum. But at this stage, I think it's just a question of how many engineers can we put to each language, and how long does it take to roll everything out. But we're absolutely committed to expanding, because obviously you can't use our product unless it supports your language. So
absolutely. I think that's kind of at the heart of what I love about what you guys are doing. It's not just about spelling correction. It's kind of about context and parsing the language. And I imagine, man, with all of those languages, that's so much research and so much data analysis to try and get it so that you're accurate with the suggestions that you pose when someone's using the keyboard. So job well done. I love your keyboard, and I will absolutely continue to use it.
Apparently, I'm 35% more efficient, Joe, since I've been using this. I'm excited. Yeah. This is great.
What that tells me, Eileen, is that you're probably a precise typist, because that statistic is based on, you know, how many words are predicted, and then you just press them, and it, you know, and if you choose next words and things. So, whereas I'm a very, very rapid typist. So for me, SwiftKey is all about being as inaccurate as I possibly can, and then just hoping it figures it out.
Very true. Was there anything else that you wanted to mention about SwiftKey 3 that we may not have that we may have missed?
Yeah, or anything that you guys have coming down the pipeline, whatever you want to plug here.
I mean, other than the shameless plug of please do go and download it and let us know what you think, we are absolutely listening. We've been a bit overwhelmed. When it launched last Wednesday in the afternoon for us, it was the morning for you guys. Our servers were so hammered that people, I think, for about 6 hours had trouble logging in download it, because we'd already quadrupled our server capacity, and we were on the biggest machine that our hosts had, but it still took us down. But we are absolutely committed to looking at every bit of feedback that people provide and to listening to that feedback. So I know that there is some controversy at the moment around, for example, we changed the punctuation key to one where you can quickly slide it. But it's not overly clear to every user when they start using that all you have to do is, you don't have to long press the period, you just tap and slide to get the key you want. And I actually really like the feature. I think it's cleaned up the UI for me, but we need to be able to educate folks to those new features.
I would hold it down and then wait for it to appear and then move over, but really you just kind of hold it and slide. That's great.
And I guess this goes to the core of user experience on Android, because people can see the comma, the question mark, and the exclamation point in above the key. What they think is, oh, okay, so that's a long press cue. So I will long press it and wait and then go. But what we're trying to do is build innovative features that, that speed people up, that challenge the status quo. But that's actually quite hard to do without the ability to then sort of walk each user individually through all those features. So I guess we're trying to strike the right balance. You know, what is obvious, what works for people, and also, you know, what people can engage with and sort of learn to love. You know, another one of my favorite features is if you type a word wrong, you just swipe your finger across the keys from right to left and it deletes that word. Now, that is a feature that there's a little toast notification up when you begin, but not everyone knows about it. And so if you go from L to A, the kind of the right to left swipe,
it goes right away.
Yeah, look at that.
The word. So it's that kind of stuff, you know, it's just trying to make sure that everyone can learn about the product and figure out those nifty little features. Because ultimately, if you're typing maybe 30 messages a day or something, that's the kind of innovation that's going to save you on aggregate maybe 30 minutes in a week, because you're not doing delete. But yeah, ultimately, give us feedback is my main message there.
I was going to say, it's got to be fascinating because you're working with, I mean, we've got this way we work with a keyboard and then the way we work with phones and a keyboard almost down to like muscle memory. So it's in terms of being able to tell users that you can do it a different way has got to be the learning curve's got to be that's the biggest challenge I see. I mean, I've been a swipe user for a while and I actually just stopped using swipe right when I got the SwiftKey because I'm like, all right, I want to try something else. And those little kind of, you just, it you don't think about it, you just do it. And being able to train yourself to do it a different way is a challenge.
Wow. Ron, I absolutely agree with you. I mean, one of the things that we found about the way that you can collect feedback for these is that your opinion within the first 5 minutes of using it will be very different to your opinion a week in to using it. Yep. And I think that's also true because obviously SwiftKey learns the way that you write over time. So, initially it might start changing words a bit that feels kind of awkward, but then once you adjust to it, once you get into the flow, you realize, oh, actually, no, this learns from me, and this is really powerful. It's a bit like a new pair of shoes is the best analogy I can use. Sometimes you put on a new pair of shoes and they're really uncomfortable, but within a week you love them because they've adjusted to you. So, just giving yourself time to adjust your muscle memory to think about these features and whether or not you like them is really important, because that's ultimately how you can tell really if they're better or worse, or whether you prefer what you had before or not, if you see what I mean.
Well, Joe, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate you taking time and staying up late.
My pleasure.
And Joe, if...
2 in the morning.
Yeah. Just one last time, if people have questions for you and SwiftKey, where should they go?
So anyone can tweet me. I'm just at Joe Braidwood on Twitter, or if you tweet at SwiftKey, we've always got people looking at that and answering questions. Or come to vip.swiftkey.net and engage with our community. It's 45,000 users at the moment, and it's growing pretty rapidly because there's so many people. We're not going to have it open forever. We're thinking about closing the doors, so it's kind of a manageable size quite soon. So if you do want to get in there, try the new beta and give us feedback, vip.swiftkey.net. Just tweet me.
Thank you so much,
Joe.
Really, really, really appreciate it. All right. Take care.
Have a wonderful evening. Cheers. Take care. Bye.
All right. Before we move on, let's take a break and thank our sponsor. And this week, it's Ting.com/AllAboutAndroid. Go there. Thank you, Ting, for sponsoring this episode of All About Android. Ting is a new mobile service that makes sense. It comes to us from the Two Cows folks, the same place that brought us Hover.com. Remember, move your domains using Hover.com. And it's all about bringing billing clarity, usability, and big savings to mobile phone users. Now, Ting was built on the Sprint network as a simple plan with honest, fair pricing that bills megabytes, minutes, and text messages separately. Let's get a phone, shall we? Let's start from the top, right? Chad, let's pick a device. I think I want to go. I know there's a bit of a wait, but I want the Samsung Galaxy S2 4G. It's just what I love. Oh, I guess we have to... Maybe we won't put
let's
in all
in
our,
your
let's,
personal
yeah,
home
let's
address,
enter in my personal
Eileen,
information. Okay, you know what? I don't talk. So let's just put 0 because I don't like to talk. And text messages, let's set 1,000 because you guys text message me a lot. I can't stop getting text messages from Jason, Ron, and Chad. Megabytes, let's go 2,000 because I am a heavy data user. And for all of that, that's $53 a month plus surcharges. Now, you do have to pay for that phone. So that phone, I think now there is a waiting list for the Samsung Galaxy S2 4G, but it's $500. But you take into account the fact that my phone bill alone is almost $100 a month already. Now, you're talking $53 once, you know, you just do the math. Eventually, that $500 up front is going to be, you know, accounted for. And then you'll, you know, really start making those savings. So I know it feels like a lot up front, but it won't be in the end. If you use less than anticipated, you are automatically credited the difference at the end of the month. That's really cool. So instead of being penalized, if you use too much, you just go up to the next tier. If you use too little, you go down to the next tier. Awesome. So if you're, you know, traveling and whatnot, you've got business, you know, that is causing you to call. Maybe I have to use my phone more so than I normally would, which is almost never. Then you'll just get bumped up one step. Not bad at all. Ting.com has no penalties or premiums. And like we showed you, they offer some 4G Android phones through Sprint. And you can get the Ting website has really clear graphic snapshots of your usage, easy access to billing information, lots of control over features, lots of help, and customer service here is great. That's what they're known for. Two Cows is known for their customer service. So if you have a problem, you'll get someone on the phone. You won't have to wait. And, you know, a lot of people have written in, and there was a marketing firm in Boston who said with six people, they went ahead and did a corporate account, and they plugged in six of them together and estimated a $12,000 annual savings for their business. Really, really awesome. You could, they have a customer feedback log. They have a blog. You can tweet. Everything, the whole company is run by a bunch of geeks, so they know. They know you guys. I think they know us better than you probably want them to. But no. So go today to ting.com/allaboutandroid, and you can purchase a phone right now from their site. Prices, again, ranging from $104 to $545. Save money and better manage your mobile phone usage with Ting. Ting is a new mobile phone service that makes sense. Enter ting.com/allaboutandroid and save $50 on your device purchase. That's pretty good savings right there. That's ting.com/allaboutandroid. And Chad, you had the Ting phone for a little bit. You liked it, right?
I loved it. Service was great. Service was really solid. Sorry, I don't have a camera on myself. But it was everything that I wanted from a phone. And it cost us like
nothing.
Like $50 a month?
Yeah,
like,
that's pretty cheap.
It was amazing. It was an amazing price. So we were very happy with
it. It's a revolutionary service, especially if you're frustrated with your data carrier, with your carrier right now. Maybe it's something for you to take a look at. Ting.com/allaboutandroid. We'd like to thank Ting for their support of our show. All right, I guess we're moving on to hardware. Don't mind me. I'm just going to get a bucket of water. Be right back. Go for it.
You know, we do this every show.
Sure, yeah. Well, you need a bucket of water.
Buckets of water, everyone.
Yeah. So earlier in the show, we were talking about HTC phones, and there's the bucket of water. There it is.
You weren't kidding.
Oh, wait. Here we go.
Oh. Pantech. Splash. Is it going in? It's in.
Oh, it's in.
Oh. Yes. I didn't know you were doing that.
The Pantech is submerged in water and powered on. Oh, yeah, I see the time.
Hopefully it works. So we'll go through your guys' stuff.
We'll see, hopefully, and then we'll let you know what we just did.
Is it on? Is it real? Oh, man, I wish I was there. I'm so angry.
Oh, it's awesome. It's awesome being here, Ron.
It's awesome.
That's great. Wait, I can see it. I'm right in front of it. There
you go. Yeah, look at that bucket. There you go.
Yeah. Kind of hard to use in the water, but go ahead.
All right.
It's hard to use in the water. Love it. Okay. Well, it's also hard to use in the water is probably HTC's new flavor of the Evo phone for Sprint. The HTC Evo 4G LTE is going to be Sprint's first handset with HD voice, and you can get it for $199.99 and pre-order start May 7th, 2 days before my birthday, in case anyone's curious. So
it's
come
not
May
a new
7th.
Phone. I got to get you this one, too?
No, I don't want this phone.
You don't want this phone, one? Though. This is a pretty nice phone.
This is a pretty nice phone. Yeah,
I'm very jealous.
Some of the stats on it. It's got a dual core 1.5 gigahertz Snapdragon. It's got 1 gig of RAM, 16 gig of ROM. It's got an 8-megapixel rear camera, big 4.7-inch super LCD 2 display. So it's got 1280 by 720 resolution, which is HD, which is awesome to go along with that HD voice. Eileen, it's got your Beats audio.
Ooh,
so
Beats.
You can keep with the Beats.
Yeah.
And to match the Beats, it's the patented HTC Evo kickstand is back, and now it's a red kickstand. So it's all nice and themed red. But what's interesting for me at least is it's going to be the first HD voice capable device, and Sprint is planning on rolling out their nationwide HD voice network in late 2012. So you could get ahead of the game on this and pre-order this phone on May 7th and be one of the first people on HD voice, which is exciting because we all want good quality talk time, that sort of thing. So pretty interesting. But then also on the tablet side of things, we got an interesting view on YouTube of the Lenovo's new tablet, the IdeaTab, S2109. They unveiled it on YouTube, and it's got an 8.9 millimeter thick unibody shell. But it's running Ice Cream Sandwich.
Yep.
So if you're looking for a tablet that's got the latest and greatest Android operating system, this could be the one. It's about 9.7 inches. It's got a 1024 by 768 LCD display. Like I mentioned, 8.9 millimeter thick, gunmetal finish unibody shell. It's got a 1.3 megapixel front camera, but no back camera. It's got a micro SD slot, micro HDMI, micro USB. And if you're running off of the battery, it will last you 10 hours. Mm-hmm. This is a neat little,
Nice looking tablet. I like the stylings on it. And I thought, for some reason, I saw the no rear facing camera, and I was like, yeah, good. Not because people don't want it, but because I don't want it. I never use it on my tablet anyway. So I'm like, yes, okay, there are others like me. Like, apparently, this isn't a need for everyone in their tablet.
Yeah.
When I was off last week, I was in Seattle and I was at a comic convention, and I saw a couple people with tablets, both iPads and Android tablets, walking around like this, taking pictures.
Oh, really?
Okay. Interesting. Seen that with the iPad.
They just look ridiculous. So,
well, and just to go back for a quick second, the HTC Evo 4G, this is, for all intents and purposes, kind of the HTC One X for,
mm-hmm. yes.
for the U.S., which the One X has gotten a lot of really good reviews, a lot of really good press and everything. This is a pretty slick-looking phone. The specs on it are really nice.
Yeah, I'm not surprised that they kept the Evo brand because Sprint put so much into that Evo launch. I remember when Evo first came out on Sprint, a bunch of my friends got it, and so taking the One X and making it the Evo 4G LTE, whatever, you know, makes sense.
Giving it 10 names. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that makes sense, right? But it's a neat looking phone, and thank God it has that kickstand.
Yeah, you just won't get Beats headphones with it.
Yeah,
right.
I think they've stopped giving out the headphones,
mm-hmm.
right?
Oh yeah, but it's got the Beats audio, so if you have the headphones,
right.
it'll
right.
Yeah, so
that's true.
Now, I don't know if this is true, but I heard that the kickstand opens both ways.
Oh.
So I don't know if anyone in the chat room wants to correct me, but that's one thing I heard over, upon the release of that. So
that's an interesting design choice, but actually that makes a lot of sense.
Because when I had the HTC Thunderbolt, that was the one thing that the kickstand opened on the side where you were charging your phone.
You would plug it in.
Oh,
exactly.
Oh, yeah.
It was such a pain. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Right on. That's cool. I missed that. How about a little bit of more rumor around the Google tablet? You know, this thing that we keep talking about because there keeps being new news about it. The Verge reported that Google's co-branded Asus tablet is actually being pushed back to July from May. Yes, the thing that hasn't been announced is being pushed to July from May in an effort to tweak the device and better hit the low price point somewhere in the range of $149 to $199. Also murmurings that this could lead to a Jelly Bean launch, which I kind of don't believe.
I doubt that completely. Yeah. I think trying to find a way to build a tablet so it's cheaper, that makes sense. But I can't imagine Jelly Bean's going to be ready by July.
Sounds a little strange to me, too. I suppose we'll find out more, or we would expect to find out more at Google I.O. Is that next month?
June.
June this year, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
which we may or may not be going to.
Yeah, we don't know.
Apparently,
probably
at this point, it's
not
looking too good.
I'll be on the sidewalk outside the Moscone Center.
Me too.
So I can say I'm there. You know, I'll be.
You'll be busking outside.
Yeah, exactly.
For passersby,
just walk in with everyone else. Like, yeah, I'm with.
Hey,
that guy.
Leaving?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, hey, you leaving? You gonna use that anymore? Can I use that tomorrow? You coming back? Yeah. Oh, you're not. Hey, I'll use it.
People are doing that at GDC.
With yeah, no, I figured as much.
That's common practice at those conventions.
Will any of your guys be at Google I.O.?
We're trying right now.
Yeah. Oh, cross fingers.
I'm just nervous about this thing right now. The only thing I'm thinking about is this tablet.
So. I know, you're pretty nervous. I'm okay, like, well, real quick, before we get to that, I'll just go ahead and say, before you buy this week, and you, too, can see my review of the LG Lucid, which is definitely kind of more a mid-range LTE phone on Verizon's network. And I'll just go ahead and wrap it up and say it's mid-range, but it's actually pretty good. I actually like this phone a lot. So if you're in the market for a mid-range Android phone, you could do a lot worse. And you probably couldn't do a whole lot better than this for the price point. It's like $79.99 with a two-year contract. So pretty good phone. But let's get to the thing that's in water, because that's even more exciting.
Wait, this is the Pantech Element, and it's an 8-inch tablet. I took it in and out, and it's still, I mean, you know, I stuck it in there for the good amount of time.
It's in there for like 10 minutes, yeah.
Yeah,
that is amazing.
So now, because it's got water, it's not going to be easy to manage.
There we go.
It's just, you know what, I probably got to dry it a little bit.
I don't know. Uh-oh. I guess we'll see.
Honestly, this is the first time I've actually dipped it in water, so I'm experiencing this for the first time.
Yeah, for those who don't know, we don't normally dunk all of our devices in water.
Wait a minute. So if it's water resistant and you can
put waterproof. It says waterproof.
It says proof.
Okay, if it's waterproof. If it's waterproof and you can bring it underwater, yet because of the display, you can't use it unless the screen is dry?
I don't know. Check in.
How am I going to be able to read my romance novel in the bath?
All right. Well, here, I'm drying it right now. There we go. See, now that I've dried it, I can actually access a little bit. See, it's still a little wet on the display, so it's a little hard. Now, I'm going to give you some specs. The 8-inch, like I said, 1024 by 768 pixel display, and it's dual core with 1 gig of RAM, and there's 16 gigs here. It's also has a connection, so 4G LTE on the AT&T service. It's $229 with a two-year contract, and it runs Honeycomb. It doesn't have ICS. There's a 5-megapixel camera on the back as well, and it also doesn't have hotspot capabilities. There's a lot of things here that are not so awesome about the tablet, but I have to say, after using it for a week, I kind of started to like it. I don't know why. It's just sort of like I never felt afraid that I would hurt it. Like, oh, it doesn't, you know, this is kind of like a tablet for the accident prone, I feel like. It runs really snappy.
That makes a lot
everything
of sense.
Everything works pretty well. It's got every you know, for Honeycomb at least, all the games run really well. Some of the apps don't scale really well because it's an 8-inch display. It's a little, you know, odd. But overall, my experience, I tended to actually like the dang thing. And it's actually reasonably priced. Now, if you don't want a contract, it is $449. There is a micro SD card. I'm afraid to open the back here because I don't want any water to seep in. But you know, they seal everything around here because they're saying it's not ruggedized, but it is waterproof. So I'm, you know, so far pretty impressed. I think once it dries, I'll be able to kind of use the touch display pretty well. I'll be able to do my Arena app after all. but yeah, I was pleasantly surprised, and I'll have a full review on Before You Buy this week as well.
Any word on
ICS?
Well, an ice cream sandwich. I know Pantech said that it's obviously
it's
capable.
They say
it's running
coming.
Honeycomb. It's capable. But
they didn't give a date or anything like that. It feels a little weird. Now, when you out of the box, it has this weird haptic, like full haptic experience. So when you swipe between pages, it feels odd. And you guys touched that the last time you were here, and I did not like that experience. I turned it off. Forgot about it.
Yeah, the haptics kind of reminded me of like cracking knuckles.
It was terrible.
But is the haptics there for underwater use?
I don't know.
Dunk it back in. Try it.
Wouldn't an overly exaggerated haptic experience make sense in water where it's a little more sluggish and you might not feel the vibe? You know what I mean?
Yes. If the screen responded while it was wet.
That was the only
thing. I just wish I could be a fly in the wall at Pantech when they're in that product meeting. And they're like, you know, I think we need to do a waterproof tablet.
Like, you can take this out by the pool, you know, when kids are splashing around. it doesn't matter. If you take your iPad out, oh no.
How much more will this add to our bottom line if we yeah. just make it waterproof?
What the guy came into work one morning, he's like, you know, what is the one thing that I can't do with a tablet? I can't bring it in the bath. And then the whole room goes silent. And then someone's like, he's on to something. And then they ran with it. They made it happen. I love it. This is America. It's great.
So, yeah, everything seems to be working just fine. Just had to dry it out for a little bit. So I was actually kind of okay with it. The display is not so great when you're looking. But when I was watching Netflix today at the gym, I took it with me. It was great.
How much is it?
It's $229 with the two-year contract. Sorry, $299 with the two-year contract and $449 without. So to me, it's decent, and I can see why it's on the top 10 of Consumer Reports list now.
Would you buy one, Tony, or would you drop it in a bucket of water?
I'd drop it in a bucket of water and leave it.
Interesting.
I've had bad experience with Pantech, Android, and all.
Really?
Pantech is not necessarily a name that inspires my confidence necessarily.
Yeah, Andre, it's not a premium brand. It's it's
mid-range.
Right. Yeah. Economic brand. Yeah.
So it's
But they're innovating for a mid-range brand. They're innovating.
Yeah, that's true. They're doing something that you can't find in all tablets. That's for sure.
Tablets.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anyways, you can see more about it on our product show before you buy.
Yeah.
I want to get one of these and take it to a water park and take it down a water slide. That's my that's the next
you
thing.
You could probably do that. Oh my God, that should be our segment is Ron at the water park. With the Pantech element.
Exactly. Look, I'm checking Twitter as I go down the slide.
I just have this image of you going down the slide and Chad actually going down facing backwards with a camera right in front of you the whole way down.
This thing is actually, like, you could totally do it. It's light, you know, it's not as heavy as a 10-incher or, you know,
I'm light. Do a Google Hangout. Like a musical montage, like when they went to the water park in Bill and Ted's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I thought
something.
Yeah.
Already.
Cool.
Well, anyway. It was breaking up a little bit there. Let's move on to the email that we have here.
I think we were not going to do the email anymore, right?
Oh, okay. I think we're actually okay on time.
We
strangely
are.
Strangely enough.
Okay.
So let's do it. It's a quick one. Jason writes in. I'll go ahead and read it. Sure. Why not? I used to download and listen to Twit on the MediaFly app. It's no longer available or working. Any suggestions for what to use? I am a truck driver and not on my laptop often. I prefer downloading, not live. Mm-hmm. So, Jason, you are probably not watching right now. Live, anyways. I don't know what to recommend other than just kind of the podcast apps that we've kind of talked about before. Stitcher, Pocket Cast, Dog Catcher, Beyond Pod. Is one of my favorites. Just subscribing to those feeds. And actually, within those podcast apps, they often make it very easy for you to get to all of the Twit feeds in particular. They'll follow, you know, other content creators that have a large directory of podcasts and stuff. But Twit most oftentimes is included in there. So you can kind of go there and pick your apps and subscribe with a single button click. I know at least on a few of these from firsthand experience, you can do that. So I know change sucks, but there are options for you.
Yeah, we did get a lot of questions because a lot of people did use the old MediaFly app, but we are no longer with them. So, you know, there are other options to get us.
Absolutely.
You know, if you need to watch us live, I mean, I've used the browser quite a bit of times. I just went in there and launched live.twit.tv as well. But anyways, hope that helps, Jason.
Yep. All right, let's get into the apps. No app news this week. Nothing happened.
Nothing happened at all.
I slept in.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, let's take a step back and show you how we're lying. In case you haven't heard, I'm just going to spell it out for you. A, Instagram launched on Android last week. Hey.
The day after our show.
Exactly.
Seriously. Tuesday. Yes.
That's usually how it goes. Yep. So expect something huge to launch for Android tomorrow.
Yes.
B, Instagram for Android quickly asserted itself as a, quote, good idea when the app surpassed 1 million downloads in less than 24 hours.
That's right.
Instagram might have beat Google Plus in my fastest accumulation of followers on an app ever.
Oh, really?
Like, in the first day, I was like almost up to 1,000. Like, it was just like, oh, I couldn't believe how quickly people just came up on it.
Yeah. You're right. I did not actually track it, but yes, a lot of followers pretty quick on Instagram. That just shows how many people are waiting for this day to come. C. Many iOS users took to Twitter to express their disgust by using words like ew and pinching their noses when they do it at the slums that are the Android community and its newfound access to their hidden treasure, Instagram, which is...
That really really upset me because I have been such a proponent. You know, you guys know I've had an iPhone since, I don't know, a long time ago, since before I even started working here. And so, yeah, I had the app. I had it when it first launched. And I was such a proponent of it for, you know, last year I was talking about, oh, if only Instagram was on Android, blah, blah, blah. And then it finally got out here and I was so disheartened by all the iOS ignorance that went in there and just said, you know, ew and all of that. I thought, okay, well, you know what? Guess what? We're here. And at first I had a moment of, well, shoot, we should just all pull out. And then I thought, no, let's just infiltrate.
Yeah.
Oh, well, infiltrate. That's
that was my point. Like, I couldn't believe the platform snobbery.
Oh, the comparisons of the same photo camera. On different phones. Yeah, like, it's a filter thing. You can just make it nice. It doesn't even matter. You could look like crap, and then you just put a filter on, and oh, my gosh, it looks so nice. I mean, that's what the point is.
And there's some people who I really respect, and some journalists and stuff like that, people who I consider friends. Mm-hmm. Somewhere. It's like, come on. It's like, that's the easy jab. And to see so many... you know, iOS users just complaining about it because the camera isn't as good and the iPhone camera is so great.
There are still 3GS users and iPod Touch users who are on this platform, or this app.
Right. Yeah. It got very cool kids table feeling. A lot of the language that was used last week. So my whole thing was fine. I'm gonna use this a lot. That was my point.
Which you did.
Yeah, exactly. I thought the interesting contrast is this reaction with Instagram versus the opposite reaction with Draw Something and how cross-platform Draw Something was and how it was kind of loved for that reason.
But it launched closely. It's different than being, a year of, it's only ours for a whole year or a year and a half, really, almost 2 years, now we'll open the gates to the other 50% of us.
that goes back to my thing about Instagram for a while that I felt as if they were being platformist and platformist. That they would really help their user base if they would install it if they would release an Android app, and they took their sweet time. But I'm starting to wonder how much of this was calculated.
Yeah, I think so too. Because today,
the icing on the cake, is today Mark Zuckerberg announced that Facebook is buying Instagram for $1 billion. Sorry, I had to ham it up a little bit.
And then you made that awesome poster on Google Plus
that went viral. So, just a little side note. I have a little mini meme.
You do?
Today.
You put it on Google Plus and it was like 600.
Suddenly it was on their Hot Topic or it was awesome. Whatever. Anyways, that's whatever. Facebook has vowed to keep Instagram a standalone app, but also integrate some of its great ideas into the Facebook product. There you go. Mark Zuckerberg announced.
And of course, now there's Facebook haters that are like, ugh, I'm not going to use it. It's dead to me now because it's on Facebook. It's like, oh my gosh.
People are looking to delete their Instagram accounts and their Facebook accounts.
I know.
Yeah. Because of this.
Jeez.
People don't realize that acquisitions can sometimes mean good things and that maybe it could be all right. You know, it doesn't necessarily, and we talked about this on the show before. Facebook will make acquisitions and shut the service down and hire the talent. So, like, for example, remember a couple of years ago when Facebook bought Drop.io and they shut the service down and they hired the developers. This isn't that case. This is a great product that Facebook wants to support and help bolster. And it sounds like they see that they're onto something. I'm sure they'll integrate the technology into Facebook, which will make Facebook better. And Instagram will continue on with its community that they built up and be so so strong.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I don't know. What I found really interesting about this is less from I'm not surprised that Instagram got bought by Facebook, because I think it's one of those lightning in a bottle premier kind of, you know, like Twitter-esque, very popular platforms with lots of user base and that sort of thing. What I do find interesting is that they just closed a series of financing, another $50 million out of $500 million valuation this April.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the investors who invested last week essentially in Instagram just got a huge payday, and that's the timing is just weird. Yeah, so
wow. Well, congrats to the Instagram team of like 10.
Yeah, right. Let's put it for all of us. Instagram on Android. What do you think?
Oh, right. Let's talk about the app.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. I had an iPhone for a little bit, kind of comparing and contrasting, and now that it's on my Android, I do it daily, a little bit too much sometimes. I'm a big proponent with like kind of Foursquare-ish kind of thing, so being able to check in with pictures and filters and things like that, I think is really cool. I don't know if my friends think it's really cool, But I hope I haven't lost any followers because of that. But yeah, it's nice to have and to follow people that I respect in the photography world and just people I like. You know, it's kind of cool to see their everyday life in, you know, that kind of view.
Were you doing this kind of stuff with other apps before Instagram? Like, there were plenty of apps that did this.
Yeah,
and PicPlease and
I never really did.
Yeah,
and I was kind of waiting for this to come over just because the user base was already pretty big with iOS. And it was one of those things that, like, yeah, I could pick up one of those other kind of no-name applications. And if they ever got picked up, that'd be great. But it's probably more likely that Instagram was going to get picked up. And the fact that Facebook got them, I don't want to say I called it, but I called it because back in December, Facebook was kind of playing around with their own filters. Mm-hmm. And they kind of had a closed or small beta test of having their own filters, kind of a competitor to Instagram that was on their site, and they never did anything with it. And now, boom, this happened. So,
mm-hmm.
And I felt that was going to happen eventually. So,
right.
But I'm happy. Yeah.
I didn't
Follow
expect
us.
To. Yeah, like I a week ago when it happened, I was like, you know, I just don't have. I'm going to use it, obviously, for the next week, but then I'm going to get tired of it because that just seems to be what happens with me in new social networks. I don't have the bandwidth to open up my time to yet another kind of social thing. But, I mean, here I am a week in, and I'm actually really enjoying playing with Instagram. I think it's just the ease of use of it. Even though there are other apps that do this, it's the ease of use and the quality of it. And, of course, I mean, above all that is kind of the network of people that are already tied into it. There are plenty of other solutions like this that are outside of Instagram and on Android. And I'm sure some of them are maybe Android strong, like Android enthusiast strong, because they're filled with, well, only Android users that, you know, whoever the developer was created this to kind of fill in the gap for, you know, the need for this on the Android platform. But Instagram, like you said, Ron, immediately suddenly had a ton of followers and had an ongoing conversation with these things. And suddenly I'm like framing these, you know, super close up pictures of a rooftop and, you know, doing all this stupid artsy stuff that I wasn't doing, you know, before Instagram launched on my phone, just because that seems to be what it's all about, sharing these kind of unique pictures and, you know, to people that appreciate them. So far I'm liking it.
One thing I think is notable is that Instagram is available on Android tablets, and Instagram does not have an iPad app.
That is interesting. So, and actually, they didn't launch on Android with the tablet support.
That's correct.
They actually had...
They've done two or three updates since they launched,
which and both of the updates were like, oh wow, they added some significant stuff. One of them was more support support wide, and then the other one was tablet support.
Right. And like the HTC One X wasn't on there when it first launched. Mm-hmm. Now I think it is.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, if you want to get a tablet and have this for right now, don't get an iPad because it's not going to be on there. So
What I thought was interesting was that they. They completely disregarded all of Ice Cream Sandwich's UI stuff.
Oh yeah, they went straight for the iOS approach.
Completely. I mean, like they have the three dot menu button in the upper right hand corner and that sort of thing. But I don't have an iPhone. I have an iPad, but I don't have an iPhone, so I don't know if this is an exact port of the iOS version.
It's very close.
So for that, I understand why, because they wanted it probably to be brand identity and to be common across all the look the same. But yeah, I just thought it was interesting that there's little to no Ice Cream Sandwich at all on this. I mean, there is, but not in the UI standpoint.
It didn't really get in the way, though. You know, like it's a well-designed app, and
it's a beautiful app. They did a great job on it. I mean, it's really strong. It's a really good app. I've been using it nonstop since all the iOS haters started getting loud. And integrated with Twitter and Facebook, great. I mean, like the uploads fast. The camera app, the camera portion of it is really good. My only complaint now is that I want either Path or Instagram to publish to each other. And once they do that, then I'm hooked. I'm good. So, but
cool.
Well, cool. I'm glad you guys are there. I'm liking your photos. I do a lot. I just browse on here quite a bit, and I just go and I say, oh, what a nice photo Jason took today. I think I'll like
that. Yeah, I bet that happens a lot that you see a nice photo that Jason took today.
I saw a lot of nice Jason photos. I got to see Ron move, and you get to see some people are very active on here and comments and just, asking you questions. And I like that. So
cool.
All right. Enough about Instagram. It's here.
Enough of
Finally.
Instagram.
Jeez.
How about something about Amazon?
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
apropos.
some interesting reports that Amazon has been testing in-app purchases on their tablet. USA Today and both TechCrunch both reported on this, that they've been testing the services for their Kindle Fire that would allow people to make purchases through the apps. And so it's important to note that the report, at least in USA Today, came from Maria Lee, or Lai, I don't know how to pronounce her last name, but she's the co-founder of a company that's participating in the pilot program by Amazon. And she, her company, Skimble, which is physical fitness programs, actually it's a pretty cool app. I know a couple people use that. She's saying that it's really in its early stages, but they're optimistic about it. Basically, you know, for those who aren't aware, both Apple and Google allow in-app purchases. The idea being, if you download an app, you want to download more content, you can buy the content from within the app. You don't need to go back to the marketplace to buy it. Amazon's Kindle Fire platform didn't have that support, and that's what they're testing with. So that's one step closer to keeping those Amazon Kindle users in that contained Amazon ecosystem. But it sounds like it's rough going, at least for right now. So who knows when it'll be rolled out to everyone else.
Well, this is only a good this is nothing but very good for Amazon, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Okay. In-app purchases in many ways generates more revenue than the app purchases themselves. And Amazon, if you remember a couple of weeks ago from I think it was the Flurry report that said that Amazon App Store is doing better at making certain developers money than even the Google Play Store is. So you add that in-app purchase mechanism into it, and man, they can only go upward. So,
but it can be an interesting challenge for developers because when you're developing an app, you'll need to put in Google's in-app purchases and Amazon's in-app purchases support, their APIs. So it's going to be that much more challenging for developers to support those multiple in-app purchase marketplaces and might lead to some apps being, this is the Amazon version versus the Google version. Right. Hopefully the developers are smart enough to keep the APIs and know what device is on and keep it all contained with one app and not have different flavors of their apps. But it might be a little bumpy going because we haven't had the opportunity for this to happen yet with the marketplace. So it should be interesting to see how developers react to it.
All right, well, moving on, just a couple of notable app updates. IMDb just updated their Android app, and now you can watch trailers in 720p. I have it up here. I'm not actually running a video yet. But there's a new update to the IMDb app for those of you who want to watch your trailers in a richer format. Also, Hipmunk had a update as well, and the company
we had
just
them on
said,
the show.
"Yeah, we had Ryan from Hipmunk on the show before." And basically, they're the first travel company to integrate calendars on mobile and bring this layer of personalization to planning. So users can integrate Microsoft Outlook, Google Calendar, and Apple iCal events and meetings into both mobile flight and hotel search results. So now, if you're booking a flight, you're not going to if you're using their services and you have a meeting, you're not going to make that mistake of booking that flight and not realizing that you had that meeting at the same time. Calendar appointments are seen in line with the flight results and on the map with hotel results. Any meetings that conflict with the flight are displayed on screen, and event locations are plotted on the map alongside hotels. So pretty nifty for the travel warriors out there.
Sweet. Oh, and real quick before we leave this segment, as this isn't in here, but on the Android developers blog, they posted up an entry about a revision to the emulator for developers.
Oh, yeah.
It actually runs really well now. It's running a lot faster than it was before.
Yeah,
I know we've talked
about
this in past episodes about how it's really slow and everything. It sounds like they've kind of addressed that.
Yeah, it's faster as GPU support lets developers use a tethered Android device to activate more hardware controls.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it looks pretty good. So check that out if you're a developer. That's probably going to be a better way, at least now, for you to develop for Ice Cream Sandwich. All right. Do you think it's time to get in the arena?
I think it's time.
Yeah?
Let's dive in.
Let's
get it. The water.
Oh, dang. Should
have done it. Let's cannonball into that bucket of water.
Bad timing.
Dive in, Pantech element.
I'm throwing the Pantech element back in the water, but now it's back.
Now you got to dry it off.
Yeah, I got to dry it off. Now.
Boo! All right. So while you're drying it off, let's take a look at last week, episode 54. It appears to be kind of a close race here.
Three votes? No, eight votes.
Yes. Nova Launcher wins with 47% of the votes.
Good job.
Foxfy, close second at 42%.
I mispronounced it. Yeah, damn.
Yes, that's.
I called it Foxby.
If only you'd pronounce it correctly. And then MLB at Bat, a distant third at 12%. So there you go. People apparently like launchers.
They like launchers.
So this week we don't have any requirements. It's yet another grab bag.
Oh, one of these days, right. And I'm the loser. Okay,
you are the loser. You go first. I have it on my phone though, if you want it.
Yeah, let's. Okay, so I have a game, and this is for those of you. I don't even know if I'll win this week, but that's okay. Those of you who are with me with Triple Town, draw something. Those of you who have the casual game likings and you get a little addicted, you might like this game. It's actually a game that I had seen a few weeks ago, and I thought, I'm not going to pick that up. And people got really excited by it. I'm like, oh, whatever. Picked it up on my phone, tried it, and like, I don't know, not really. Then I got the Pantech Element and played it on a tablet, and then I kind of got addicted. And partly the reason why I actually like this tablet. The game is called Temple Run, and there you are. You're that guy. You're that guy. You're running. Oh, do we not have audio? That's too bad, because the audio, you can hear him panting and grunting.
I do have
and
the
jumping
audio plugged
up
in.
And down. So basically what you do is, the
I
point
suck.
Of the game is that you run for your life from demonic monkeys. And as you run in this sort of narrow runway, you jump over obstacles, you collect coins, and those coins Jason, you die. And you have also really objectives. Hard. So some objectives are run for 500 meters without dying. Run for 1,000 meters without dying. And, of course, it's free on the Google Play Store.
There's
there
the
you
sound.
Go. Can we hear grunting? We can't hear grunting. Okay, so the coins that you select.
You saw my finger do it.
So, literally, it's a really quick and easy game to pick up. And if you just want to, you know, get a quick fix, this might be for you. But so the coins, what you could do with the coins is purchase power-ups. So let me describe. So you're running. you're running, and you swipe up to jump. You swipe down to kind of crawl underneath things. You swipe right or left to turn right or left, and then you have to avoid obstacles. Pick up those coins, like I said.
I did it. It was there.
And the coins give you power-ups like invisibility, like double coins. And eventually, I'm almost there where I have 10,000 coins and I'm going to unlock a different character. And like I said, you have other objectives like, don't pick up any coins for 500 meters. That one was really hard because you just kind of run into it. And also, you can use the accelerometer to kind of tilt left and right on your phone or your tablet. I find myself having a really much more richer experience on a tablet because I have more places to swipe left and right and up and
down.
That's
what it is. That's why I'm losing.
Yeah, I didn't really like it on my phone, quite honestly. But Flesh TA. You can use accelerometer to go right and left, but not turn right and left. You just kind of tilt so that you can get to the coins if it's on to the left side of the narrow passageway or the right side of the narrow passageway. But you still have to swipe up and down. So, you know, again, it's short. I've done runs where I've been like 2,000 meters and literally, you know, the runs get faster and faster. Mm-hmm. And then you're invisible or you've got like, you know, speed demon glow
burst.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. It gets crazy. And you literally have to be really concentrated. Thank you, Jason, for playing this because I wouldn't be able to.
No, there's no way you could do that talk at the same time. And if you could, I'd be really impressed.
You know, it's been really popular. And now I see the light. I get it. I understand. I've been playing this along with Triple Town still. And it's been a whole lot of fun.
I gotta go under it for the tree. I just gotta tell you, like, this is one of those games where 2 minutes in and your heart's actually going.
I know. When I first opened up the game, I was a little anxious. And then after a while, I just kind of dug in. I said, I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna get this guy. I'm gonna get this guy running. Run. And then
That's a hard game.
You know, kind of want to go to the gym and run. So that is Temple Run. And I guess you're supposed to catch something at the very end, but I don't know, whatever. You're just running for your life. That's the point of the game. You're supposed to be catching you're running with that item in your hand.
I thought you're running forever.
You just run.
Is it a forever?
I don't know.
With no end.
So there you go. Temple Run. Enjoy.
Yeah, this is a big deal when it launched a couple of weeks ago. The Android blogs were going crazy over it.
And I kind of just I said, yes, eh, whatever. And then I finally picked it up, and then I understood.
Yeah. No, it's a lot of fun. So, it's just kind of stressful. So
it, slightly stressful. So if you're already angry, maybe don't play.
Yeah. And if you're trying to relax, like if you're one of those people that like plays games to relax before, you know, important things, don't play this one, maybe, because it'll stress you out.
You might get stressed.
Just say it.
So anyways.
All right.
Cool. Temple Run.
Temple Run,
you go.
Free in the Google Play Store.
Yeah, it is free.
All right. Excellent. So for this one, I actually need a bit of a prop here. Oh. I got to put on my Mets hat because so last week it didn't do so well in the voting last week when Nicole talked about the MLB At-Bat 2012. But when I was – as the baseball season started and I was installing my At-Bat app, I noticed that Major League Baseball rolled out a different app this year, a newer app that's actually called At the Ballpark. And I was like, oh, that's weird. Let me check it out. And it's, you know, it's really pretty cool. Basically, this app is meant to be your companion at the game. So you put it on your phone. It also works on a tablet. It's free to download. It's got every ballpark in the system loaded in. It's location aware. So I was standing on the street in San Francisco, and it said my nearby ballparks were AT&T Park and the Coliseum in Oakland. And you can see here that there's a schedule. You get some tickets information, promotions, a map of the ballpark, how to get there, little things like that. But this is where it gets even neater, okay? So, Jason, and you're driving since I'm remote. Yep. Can you back out and actually go and switch your stadium to Citi Field in New York City for my team of choice, the Mets? So let's say that I'm at a game. What's that second menu item? Oh, you can order food.
Oh, no way.
You can order a hot dog.
Isn't that cool? So what you do is you enter in what section, what row, and what seat you're in.
They go to any section, or is it limited to like the premium seats?
Wow. As far as I know, it's any section. Now, understanding that this is limited to, I think, 8 ballparks. So they're testing in 8 ballparks. But, for example, it's not available in AT&T Park, but it is available in Citi Field. I'm sorry. I don't know. I don't know the sections offhand. I think it's like, try 344 or something like that. I think they're 3 digits.
Is there a delivery fee?
Yeah, I'm sure there is. I'm sure. Oh. No, I haven't tried it. Yeah, I haven't tried it at a game because I haven't been in New York to go yet, but now I really want to. In addition, you can they've connected this app to your user profile on MLB.com. So I'm an MLB.tv subscriber. I have a profile. I can now check in and say, I'm going to check in. I'm at this game, and I can link my account to my Foursquare or my Facebook account. And it will check in on those services. But also, once you check in at the stadium, it unlocks deals for you because you've checked in. So, for example, I checked into the Met game tonight, which is – I'm not there. So that's – you know. And it gave me – it said, you know, here are offers and promotions for coming to the game. That's pretty cool. That's a interesting way to get all of us app-oriented, socially networked people in together to get –
hot dog.
Get us
–
exactly. Like, how cool is that? So I'm even more excited to go to a baseball game now that I've got this At the Ballpark with me on my phone. So it's free, and it just enhances your experience at the ball game. That's pretty cool. So especially with a lot of ballparks, like AT&T Park is free Wi-Fi, so you're not going to drain your battery using it. You can get some videos, you can watch some cool stuff. It's a great way to celebrate our American pastime. So there you go.
Bring up the cool American flag, yeah. Chad. Our American pastime.
I went there.
Cool.
Very cool.
Ordering hot dogs through an app. That's what I like.
You see, now my thought is that now the whole ordering from the app, because hypothetically, if I knew someone was at the game, I'd send them food.
That's what I was trying to see.
You're trying to send someone food?
Yeah.
Oh, there's your
American there's the flag. Very nice.
Touch.
There it is.
Did not expect that one. Awesome. So that is At the Ballpark. It actually ties in with MLB At Bat as well. I know I saw that somewhere on here.
Yeah, no, you can jump over to and watch the game on that sort of thing. So.
Right on.
It's cool. And it's a pretty app. They did a really good job. Major League Baseball, they've got a whole...
Don't forget, it's American.
They've got a whole company to doing this stuff at MLB Advanced Media, and it's cool to see them finally doing some innovative stuff. So yeah. As opposed to, you know, I feel like they've been catching up the past couple of years. So
I'm sorry, what country is that from again? America.
There we go. Okay, woo, okay. We forgot. All right, cool. Well, that is At the Ballpark. Now, Tony, You have an app that I was going to save it, seeing it for the first time until now. I know Eileen checked it out beforehand.
I
and she
did.
Said it was really
I checked
cool,
it out. So. I kind of like it. But I like these kind of games.
Cool. Go ahead.
All right. So, if you want to put the camera on my
screen
here.
What's it called
here,
first?
It's called Cytus or Cytus. And it's free in the Google Play Store. And essentially what it is, well, DDR, or Dance Dance Revolution, for your fingers. So it's similar to Tap Tap Revenge. Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got a great soundtrack. Let me just turn this on here. So I'm going to try this song here. And you just have to hit the little circles to the beat when the horizontal line hits the specific circle. So let's give
here
it a shot.
It goes.
Here we go. So just tap your
cue
fingers.
Cue dramatic music.
So there's circles showing up all over the phone, and you have to touch them at the right time.
And so they grow from small to large, and you know that once they're large, that's when you have to hit them.
You can't hit them too soon because they'll be bad or you'll miss it or something.
Oh, wow.
And if you don't...
That would be horrible at this game.
And then does the music kind of stop if you...
No, if you totally screw up, it just goes through the whole song, and it's... It goes through the whole song, and it just says fail at the end.
And just fail. Play the song,
epic fail.
But you failed.
Yeah.
Epic fail.
The artists, the musicians are musicians around the world. And for the free version of this game, you get, I think, 4 levels for free and an exclusive song for Android versus iOS. And if you want more levels, 18 levels, it's only $1.99. As an in-app purchase.
I'm kind of amazed that you're able to talk about this and still do it at the same time.
The same reason I had Jason play my app. That's why I was like...
But it's great on a tablet, I got to say. It is really good on a tablet.
A little bit easier on that bigger screen real estate.
Well, very cool.
That's cool. That's Cytus.
And how many songs are there? Are there a lot of songs
here? You get 18 plus songs, but if you just want the free version and just... conquer that. I think you get 3 songs for free.
Okay.
And then there's easy level and then a hard level, and it tells you at the bottom what level of easy and what level of hard. And if you want to open up the full version, it's $1.99.
Okay.
Yeah,
sweet.
That's not bad.
That's awesome.
I love these songs. These are awesome.
I know. Cool songs. I know. Ron and I have been head bopping the whole time. We've been like, yeah.
That's really cool. I had not heard of Cytus. And check it out. Cytus in the Google Play Store. Is that the music still? Okay, I guess this is the time in All About Android when we dance.
Let's let the winner go now. It's Jason's turn.
All right. So I wasn't really quite sure what to do today, and then it kind of struck me. We've done a lot of Twitter apps on the show in the past, so I kind of hesitated to do another one because I've been using TweetDeck and then TweakDeck, which is kind of like a revised version of TweetDeck for so long. But I always realized that on the tablet, on my tablet, I always used an app called Plume. It used to be Twatter, I believe. Twatter.
Twitter told them to change it.
Yes, and then Twitter told them to change it. Exactly. So they changed it to Plume. And I always really liked it on a tablet. I don't even know if you have the over-the-shoulder shot for the tablet still.
There it is.
But I'll have to hold it all the way out over there. But it's a nice, easy to use Twitter client on the tablet. And of the ones that I've used, it was just kind of the most friendly for me to do things like have the integrated browser and everything. On a tablet, it's a really comfortable Twitter client. But I still always used TweetDeck or TweakDeck on my phone. Well, they actually, just over the weekend, I believe, or end part of last week, rolled out an update for their phone version of the app, integrating a lot of Ice Cream Sandwich stylings into it. And I've been using it over the weekend, and I'm pretty sure that I'm going to ditch TweakDeck for this now, just because it's extremely customizable, and I just am really liking the look of it. Now, first of all, you see the ad down at the bottom. There is a free version of it. It's ad-supported. I don't mind that, but I'm going to use this enough that I'm probably going to buy the paid version, which pretty much is exactly the same, except it's ad-free. So you can get the full functionality if you don't mind dealing with the ad. The paid version is $4.99. And just to give you kind of a quick look through it, I won't spend a whole lot of time because Twitter clients, you know, they're all kind of similar, but really it's about the look and feel of it that's kind of nifty. You have all of your options here. If you go to this home, you can get to some of the cool things like the favorited tweets that you want, that you've ever favorited, something that I don't really do a whole lot. But you can see things like the trends, you know, what's trending, and this probably has some bad words in it, so I'll have to mask that out of the downloadable version. Any of your lists that you happen to have, I have one on Android with all the people that I follow and sources that I follow for Android that I love to have on my mobile device. You can add all of these to columns and sort your columns so you can have everything accessible if I swipe left or right. And I love the ice cream sandwich fragment when they use this piece of the UI. It's so easily done. It makes things so much easier to use. But as you can see, I've added my Android list. It has things that I really like in a Twitter client. Like if I go to the very top and pull down, it'll do the pull to refresh, which is kind of a nice feature that once you start to use that, it's really hard to go back. You can do things in the settings like mute a person or mute a conference, a string
South
text.
By Southwest.
Sure. Yes. Exactly. Like you aren't at South by Southwest, and you don't want to know how much fun everybody's having. Mute South by Southwest. Sure. So that's pretty nifty. Let's see here. Inline conversation view. So if I go to, let's see here, I got to find one that I know I have a conversation with. This one right here, if I click it once, you end up seeing kind of the thread that got you there, which I like. I really like being able to easily get to things like that when you're managing a lot of at replies back and forth and you want to find something that just makes it infinitely easier than scanning through the entire list to try and find the thing that came before, which is what I'm doing now, and it's making you dizzy. You can switch the view if you have multiple accounts, so go ahead and do that. And right now I have Jason Howell, and then I have at RayGunZero.
Still
alive and kicking. Still wondering if I should have made that switch, but I'm sticking to it. And then some other just random tidbits that are usually pretty common in these Twitter apps. The photo sharing agents, you can do a whole list of different photo sharing agents depending on how you want to do it. Bitly, a bit.ly, you can integrate your own bit.ly account for shortening links. And then I already mentioned the internal browser. And just real quick, the settings. If we go to customize, one thing that's really big about this is just your ability to customize everything. So that's, you're talking, you know, the font size on the screen that you saw. I think it comes normally at this little normal size, and it'll take a second for it to update. But then you see it that small, and I don't care for it that small. One thing I like to do is boost the size of it. But, I mean, that's just one thing. You can do that. You can have it highlight mentions of you in a different way. So you can have it either put like a little box tab on the side, or you can have it kind of do this kind of striped thing so it's really easy to see when you've been mentioned in your feed. They have all these different theming options, light, dark, normal. You can hide the avatars if you don't want to see those. You can real name display instead of seeing usernames. Reverse the sort order, time view. So time view would be, you know, if you wanted on this right-hand side right there, I have it on time view right now. You can set it so that it says, you know, 12 hours ago or whatever. Just different customizations like that that make it really useful. And then finally, of course, and sorry to switch it up on you, Chad. There's the other one. What would be complete without a whole host of widgets that you can add to your homepage? On your home screen. On my phone, I don't really use the widgets a whole lot, but on the tablet, it becomes really handy. So again, that is Plume. If you're still searching, like I seem to be off and on, for a Twitter client that you feel very comfortable with and you like the whole feature set, Plume might be it. It's a little pricey at $4.99 for the paid version, but
you get what you pay for, though, right?
I think so.
I mean, you get services and options more often than you would if you just got a free app.
Mm-hmm. So. And you know, it's just as usable, but in a different way on the tablet as it is on the phone. I think that's very cool. You know, they both kind of do things a little bit differently, but they're both extremely easy to use. Mm-hmm. And so I highly recommend it. That is Plume, free as well as $4.99 in the Google Play Store. So great apps that we've talked about today.
Let's vote.
Let's vote. bit.ly/AAApoll55.
55.
bit.ly/AAApoll55. That's 55 is the episode number. So check out that link and let us know what you think.
Look at you, Sitis.
Is the best app so far. So far, early reports are in. Sitis is in the lead with 38% of the votes. Plume trailing far behind in fourth place.
See, people like those dance, dance, revolution, finger games, dance, 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 dance.
See, I like. I feel like when the guest apps win,
let's play the music again.
Wins, we all win.
That's right.
Yes, there you go. That's very true. Play the music again. Dun dun tap 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 tap. Sorry, we should wrap the show up now. Trey's like, what the heck is going on?
I know,
there?
Right? Well, we do have to wrap this up, actually, because we are right on the heels of Trey's Variety Hour.
Yes, his Variety Hour.
Which follows. So, again, that's bit.ly/AAApoll55. And that is it for this episode. Tony Hannity's, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for coming all the way up here and, you know, hanging out.
Yeah, not a problem. Telling us your take on Android. This is your chance to kind of plug whatever you want. So, for it.
Well, I am the mobile tech writer for LazyTechGuys.com. You can follow us on Twitter at LazyTechGuys. We're on Facebook, Google+, YouTube, LazyTech TV. And we're getting our own kind of podcast network, too. So maybe we could have you guys come on one day.
Absolutely. Yeah. We'd be happy to do that.
Cool.
That's great.
Thanks, guys.
Cool. Thank you for joining us. All right, Ron, it's your turn.
Real simple this week. Just go to Instagram and find me. I'm RonXO. Follow me on Instagram. I'm taking all my photos. I want to get as many followers there as possible. So let's make it happen, Androiders.
Wow.
So, and if you're not on Instagram, go to about.me/RonXO. You can find all the links to those other spots.
Ron is all in at this point.
I'm all in.
Wow. All right. Well, welcome to Instagram, Ron.
Yeah.
I am Eileen R. I know it's very confusing. And I already had Eileen TV on Twitter when I opened up that Instagram account. But Eileen R. I am on Instagram since we're pitching that right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Otherwise, just go to about.me/Eileen Rose.
I believe I'm Reagan01.
Are you
Instagram.
On it? Yeah.
You are.
99% of the time I do that. And then on Twitter, I change it up and I'm at Jason Howell. Don't ask me why. All right. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of All About Android. That is it for this week. You can leave us a voicemail at 347-SHOW-AAA. You can always leave us an email or a video mail. Send us a link in an email to AAA@twit.tv. You can find the show on Twitter. We are at Android Show. Show notes can always be found at twit.tv/AAA. And finally, you can catch us live every Monday at 5 p.m. Pacific at live.twit.tv. That is it for this week. I believe we're going to go ahead and drown this tablet one more time. Just because we can.
Yeah. Woo-hoo.
See?
Woo-hoo. See, it's still on.
Oh, it's still on.
Still on.
It's amazing. It's technology.
Oh, it's on.
It's on.
It's on.
It's on like Donkey Kong.
And I can't really do anything with it while it's on.
Maybe it's not on.